This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I do have the air conditioning on. We are actually in summer now that it's September. So we really did get by easy this summer. We never got up, I think, over 95 this summer, which usually we have at least a couple of days, you know, when we're up 100, 101, somewhere in there, or 102. There was a jeweler in town that had a big thing going that in July, if you bought something in July and it hit 103 degrees on August the 3rd, that it would be free, mostly free. And so he didn't have any trouble with that one this year, because lands, it was nice all year. I mean, this summer, it's just been really nice. Anyways, it's Thursday today. Not coming in tomorrow, unless there's a big problem, which it's the beginning of the month. Everything's good. They're going. Everybody's happy. So yay. Boom. So we don't expect to have any problems. In addition, it's going to be pretty quiet tomorrow because Monday's Labor Day, so people have already started taking their three-day weekends and stretching them out. When I came in today in the parking lot was not that full today. I thought, what? Oh, yeah, it's Labor Day weekend. So people are taking their vacations because they can get an extra day in there and stretch it out. So that's good. I have a weekend of reading ahead of me. I'm editing. Everything seems to be going fine there. As you go back and read through it, there's always new stuff. You think, oh, I could do that. Oh, I could do that. Oh, I need to emphasize this more, you know. So I'm in that tweaking phase. And I'll be tweaking and reading probably for another week and a half. And then I gotta get the cover started. And once I have the cover fairly well laid out, then I can start doing the layout. And actually, I'll probably do the layout first to find out how many pages it is. So that when I start doing the cover, I'll know, you know, what I've got going there. So it's at some point in there, I gotta get my grandson dressed up in old-timey pants. Or tattered pants, some kind of pants that aren't just normal, and some kind of shoes that aren't just normal, and get a shot of him so that I can paste just his legs and feet behind a huge pile of possessions that he's supposedly carrying on his back. So this will be fun. I just finished yesterday reading through the section that explains the parable in Windfall, the Straight Gate. And that's pretty good. I thought today, actually early this morning, and as I was working, I thought, oh, I need to emphasize that. And so left myself a note and probably going to tackle that again this evening just to add that stuff in while it's fresh in my mind and then start doing some reading. So all in all, everything's going good. I do have a quote-unquote guest with me in the car today. I have already been photographed with it a couple of times. Or I guess I should say photographed with her, so I'm not being sexist and objectifying. I got to work today, and one of my fellow programmers said, Phil, I have a body in my trunk for you. I said, oh. I said, yeah, it's a female body. I said, oh. He said, your wife called my wife, and she said I was supposed to bring this to you. I said, okay. He said, it's in my trunk. I didn't necessarily want to bring it in. I said, okay. Said, so we can transfer it at some point. I said, well, that's fine. Let's go do it now. Our trunks are right next to each other out there in a parking lot. So I think my wife was looking for something that she could display a t-shirt on. And so it's a dressmaker form. And so it runs from about the hips to the neck. There's no head on it. Which there's a joke in there that women do not appreciate. So which I will not say. So he gave it to me. I put it in the trunk. And then, of course, when I came, I told Brad, I said, well, given the topic that I'm working on today, I said, I think I'm just going to use the mannequin as a passenger. So, and as I came out today and I opened the trunk and pulled out the mannequin, some of the other programmers were looking at me like, what? So, one of the programmers wanted to get a picture and, you know, and I'm holding up this mannequin. Got to be a little bit careful where I'm putting my hands. So I did move it up in front with me since it is strangely appropriate for the topic today and buckled it into my seat. So as I'm driving home, I have a headless torso, female torso, strapped into the seat beside me. And one of my buddies, same buddy that took the first picture, also took a picture of me sitting in my car with the headless torso. So anyways, who knows where those pictures are going to show up. But the great thing about being a consultant is I don't have to worry about that. So anyways, let's see, writing's going good, that's going good. All is well. Otherwise, all is well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's happening. I don't think so. So, today, I came across an article. Actually, a friend had posted it on Facebook. And I got reading through it, and I thought, oh, this is a pretty good article. This is pretty interesting. Because I think it puts things in perspective. Honestly, is there sometimes in life, as I have moved through life and come to believe that I have learned something important, something that seems like it is obvious, something that has been beneficial and that has been helpful in my life, and as I share that with others and it's helpful and beneficial for them as well, then I get to wonder why, oh why, oh why did it take so long for me to have to figure this out on my own, and why didn't somebody tell me about this a long time ago? Because there's, you know, in the late 1990s is when, I think that was the late 1990s, is when I kind of came to an understanding of flesh and spirit. And so, you know, I wondered, well, this seems very basic. It's supported in scripture, and it's supported in culture, and so why... why didn't somebody tell me this? If somebody had told me this 30 years ago, there are things that would have been better in my life. And so that's why I try to talk to young people, older people, kind of give them this platform. And this whole thing about the fact that the two basic mechanisms that the flesh uses, the most primal mechanisms that the flesh uses to move us in the wrong direction, are actually gender-based. And for men, the flesh uses lust, and for women, the flesh uses fear. You know, now that I'm there and I'm looking around and I see this everywhere, and I was thinking, what? if this is everywhere, this idea of lust versus fear, why didn't somebody tell me this? It makes so many things make sense. Why in the world did it take so long? So, as I'm reading things now, of course, now that, you know, my hammer has another angle on it of lust versus fear, then it seems like every time I'm looking around, I just see this everywhere. Because to the man with a hammer, all the world's a nail. That's the that's the way it goes. So, I came across an article, and the name of the article was What Men Complained About Women 50 and 100 Years Ago. And I thought, oh, hey, sure, I'll read that. Let's see what this is about, because I think it's really important to get perspective. I mean, that's really good. This was written by a couple, Brett and Kate McKay. Apparently they have some kind of a site, you know, about encouraging men to be real men and like that and like that. So anyways, which it would be fascinating to me to be able to, it would be fascinating to me to be able to study mechanics. Because just this week I was reading about the fact that, whoever the quarterback is for the New England, Tom Brady, New England Patriots. I am not a sports guy. He's married to Gisele Buchanan, whatever her name is, from Brazil, supermodel, beautiful woman. Apparently, their marriage, they're having trouble in their marriage. You know, which is always interesting to me, because there are a lot of people who are having trouble in their marriages, okay? There's no question about that. But it seems to me I haven't actually done a study, and maybe I should look it up and talk about it next week. I haven't actually done a study, but it seems to me, maybe because they're so high profile and because they're under such pressures, that there are other reasons why beautiful women seem to have trouble staying married. You know, the really sad one was Jennifer and Ben Affleck, because they seem to... I tell you, at this point, the couple, I don't even know what the guy's name is, but Evangeline Lilly and her husband, I guess who's a Hawaiian fisherman who stays really far under the radar, they seem to be okay, at least from what she says, they're okay now. Who knows what's going to happen in a few years. But that's always fascinating to me, that you have these beautiful women who can't seem to stay married. And the reason it's fascinating to me, the reason, is that men are pretty simple. You know, they're pretty simple. So the fact that men can't seem to stay married to these women means that there is something going on. Because with men, it's, I want something to eat, I want some place to sleep, I want to have sex, and I need something to hunt. That's pretty much it. And if you're getting the sex that you want, that pretty much takes care of the rest of the three. So the fact that these men would be unhappy in their marriages, I could understand how the women would be unhappy in the marriages, because for a woman, that she's much more complex, has a whole other set of drivers, because the base is the base of fear, and so that causes a whole lot of other stuff to percolate up. For men, the base is lust. So if you get that lust satisfied, unfortunately, lust has an appetite, and you satisfy it, and it just wants more. But it seems to me that you stand a greater chance of satisfying lust than you do fear. I think fear is much more difficult to satisfy, because it skitters out in so many ways. But anyways, that's a whole other discussion. So I find that interesting. So then, okay, so fine. So you've got 50, 100 years ago. What men complained about women 50 and 100 years ago. they start off the article talking about the fact that it often seems that men and women have never before held such a low opinion of the opposite sex. Women complain that there are no real men out there, that today's generation of males are akin to a tribe of rude, crude, lost little boys who won't commit and are drifting through life. Men lament that modern women are the worst crop of females the world has ever seen, that on the whole, they're flighty, crass, and prickly, and they come in two equally unpalatable flavors: angry social justice warrior and entitled princess. So the question is, okay, so if that's true, what were men saying about women earlier? And, you know, it's pretty interesting. They've got an article from 1946 from a magazine called Pick, and they had picked, this magazine had done both sides. They had first asked the ladies what they didn't like about the men going to college, and then they had asked the men what they don't like about the ladies. The ladies, where their answers were generally revolving around the fact that men weren't dressing up enough, that they came to class in military clothing. You have to understand, this is right after World War II. And that they often hung out in their government-issued T-shirts, which the ladies thought looked like underwear. Okay, so the men weren't styling. They didn't like men in jeans. The men drank too much. They preferred to hang out with their buddies instead of socialize with the girls. Okay, in the next issue that came out, then the men got in their complaints about the women. And they said generally the complaints swung between bemoaning the high-maintenance ladies who wore too much makeup and lamenting the women who carried over mannish Rosie the Riveter fashions from the war. So, you know, you got men who are complaining about the way the women look. The women are complaining about the way the men look. Okay. Plus, the men are complaining about what the women want. He said, a fellow doesn't stand a chance with a sorority girl after she gets through comparing notes with her sisters after a date. Still others, parlor dates are extinct as the vanishing American. These days, if you date a girl, you're broke for 2 weeks. You know, men were also lamenting the fact that wore too much lipstick, and then if you kissed, it was all over you, blah, blah, blah. Another guy was saying, well, I wish women would realize most of us are in the 65-12 club. It's $65 a month for 12 months. GI Bill of Rights stuff. You'd never note it from the way they suggest the Stork Club for a date. Another lad's pet peeve, girls who take up classroom space that could be used to educate more vets. Uh-oh. So he said, it's just to meet a man that they come to college. Tell them to stay home. We'll find them. Okay, well, that's not so good. That's not so good. So, I mean, and it just goes on and on. You know, a girl who insists putting up the top of my convertible so her hair won't get messed up in the wind is a dead duck for another day. You know, other sad sacks. Still another sad sack lists things that were boring him to death. Girls who talk about the other guy. Girls who read love stories instead of newspapers. The matriarchal type. The type that tries to make you a brother even after the first day. Okay, so this stuff has been going on and on and on and on and on. All these things. We don't like how they're dressed. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, there was another article in 1946. It's called, I'm Fed Up with Career Girls. So this guy's complaining. I'm speaking of America's smart young businesswoman, the career girl, to coin a cliche. She's a gal whose economic independence has given her a chance to forget the word femininity. But when it comes to being feminine, the current crop of the nation's lovelies are a sorrowful lot. Schooled in the routine of 9 to 5, as smart young executives, they've become a legion of well-tailored mannequins. each with the warmth and personality of a camshaft. As for any observances of social graces, that's a joke. Okay, so they don't like the fact that women are working. You know, don't like the fact that they're maybe not as needy. So, another guy, he's talking about the fact that when he was off to war, his wife got an apartment to save some money, and now that he's back, every time she refers to their home, she refers to it as my apartment, my bookcase. Yeah. So, there you go. From 65, which I got tickled with myself when I first read this, because I thought, 65, that's not 50 years. No, I guess it is 50 years ago, because I remember 65. I was 7 years old in 65, which is just weird. It's weird that was 50 years ago. Talk about the fact that, okay, here's this guy, and he's just working in a bank, hates his job, and a buddy of his comes, says, hey, I'm retiring, do you want to take my fishing business and my tackle shop and tackle and bait shop and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's an established shop. And he gets all excited because he loves this kind of stuff. Goes home and his wife's telling him, oh, my dead body, you're going to take that. You're not going to give this up your stable job. And so, you know, he ends up just slaving away at his stable job because his wife's afraid. And they went on at 65 and talked about, you know, women are afraid of all kinds of things. Financial insecurity is only one of them. Women are afraid of physical hardships, physical danger, illness, the dark, lizards, mice, and insects. This is understandable because women are constituted to fear things more intensely than is reasonable. There isn't much a man can do about it. But when a female fears, prevent a man from doing the things that he wants to do. Time to blow the whistle and time for a declaration of male independence from womanish worries. Okay, yeah. See, this stuff has been going on forever. Blah, blah, blah. So now, you bounce back to 1892. So it's over 100 years ago. So, what are men complaining about? Too much time is given by young ladies to dressing. They scarcely think of anything else. Another person said, the love of dress, the inordinate desire to excel in companions in this particular, as among the common faults. Okay. Another says they try to make themselves attractive by conspicuous colors and suggest that if they spend less time in shopping and more time in elevating occupation. I'm getting my mail. For example, in making a home bright for both parents and brothers, it would be better. Another said, frivolity arising from a want of purpose in life. Even the most sacred duties and relations are being marred by this frivolousness. Okay. So, I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. You know, women needs deeper and intenser earnestness. They need to reach a high level of excellence of moral character. Only as they prepare themselves for life by self-discipline and culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Talked about how that disregard of health is a common fault, a lack of glad earnestness, thoughtlessness, heedlessness, the disregard of the feelings of other, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so they saw in their male friends the ladies' top complaints from about men. Okay, so this is what 100 years ago they were saying about men. I'm backing into my garage. One moment. Get this backed in. So, this is what the ladies said about men. Self-conceit. Their cool self-satisfaction and expectations of worship without any particular effort to make themselves particularly admirable or worthy of worship. Irritability and grumpiness, selfishness, lack of respect. In these days, old-time courtesy, true gentlemanliness is often wanting in young men. Okay, so what do they conclude in this article? On one hand, it may seem depressing and justify the idea that the sexes are fundamentally incompatible and that men should just deal with women as little as possible. On the other hand, it's kind of liberating and comforting to know that one is not living in some uniquely terrible time with burdens unfaced by past generations, that men and women sometimes butt heads, then comes to be seen not as some insurmountable problem of the modern age, but as something inherent to the human condition and perfectly navigatable. All right. This gets back to what I was talking about. Was it last week? You know, that you're going to have a king and you're going to have a queen in a marriage, because every man and woman going into a marriage imagines, the man imagines that he's going to be king and the women imagine they're going to be queen. And if they both try to be rulers of each other at the same time, it's not going to work. And eventually what's going to happen is one's going to acquiesce. In very rare instances, they both will come to understand that neither needs to be the ruler and they just need to be partners in life. That's rare. What really is going to happen is that either the man is going to acquiesce and just do what his wife wants, or the man is going to rage and roar and his wife is going to acquiesce and just do what he wants. And that's the way it's going to be. So the conclusion is that indeed the failings and ideals we alternatively criticize and champion in the opposite sex might be better characterized as humans' failings and merits rather than gender-specific ones. Men and women work for the same virtues and succumb to the very same flaws. See, I don't think that's true. But often express and manifest them in different ways. I don't think that's true. With this realization comes a new mindset. How can I help my brothers and sister be their best selves? Because while men and women have complained about each other since time immemorial, at least one difference can be observed between our time and the past. Folks used to look on the bright side of things, seeing what was praiseworthy despite the flaws and only criticizing seeking to criticize constructively. I don't think that's true either. But anyways, the conclusion that Miller, who I don't know who Miller is, but I'm sure he's some kind of an expert. Looking for the expert. I don't know. We'll just say that Miller's an expert. So what he concludes about, this is what he advises. While we must not be blind to our faults and imperfection, the best way to deal with them is usually not to try to remedy them one by one, but seek a larger abundance in life, thus expelling them by the power of new affections. Without doubt, the true method in the culture of character is not to give too much thought directly to one's defects and faults, but to seek to have that heart life pure, strong, and full, so that it will throw off the blemishes and flaws and fill up what is lacking in the outer life. Okay, I partially agree with that. Focus on the spirit. Focus on the spirit. But I think it is useful not to look on specific flaws, but to understand generally what the drive is and what is pushing us to certain things. I think it's very useful for men to realize that the primary thrust of the flesh in their lives is lust. Because when that rises, you can then slow yourself down and you can do things like praying, "Dear God, I thank you that you have placed such beauty in the world. I just pray today that you will bless this woman in whatever she puts her hand to do. If she's a mother, help her to be a wonderful mother to her children. If she is a wife, help her to be a wonderful wife to her husband. For her relationship with you, I just pray you bless." I mean, because when you do that, when you recharacterize in a way that is more bent towards love as opposed to lust, then that lust does dissipate because the flesh gives up and starts getting you to think about something else. In the same way, I think it's possible for women to recognize that their emotional reactions are, in fact, can be traced back to fear. And the basic question that should always be asked is, when I'm having this emotional reaction that I know is not spirit, The basic question is, what lie is the flesh telling me? And if I can understand what that lie is, I can get a spotlight on it and I can tone it down and I can cause it to be dissipated. And it really does work. That really does work. If you can figure out what the lie is, you can tone it down. So while I do think it's absolutely essential for us to focus on spirit, focus on gratitude, focus on grace, focus on mercy, and in the building up of that, we can build ourselves up and we can keep from being critical of our spouses. I think it's also important for us to constantly understand the difference in the battle between us and our spouses and why it's different. And that the only way that you're actually going to get some movement on that battle is if we recognize what really is the underlying problem. You know, a man might have a problem with anger, but in most men, I think what you can do is trace that back to he's not getting, his lust is telling him he's supposed to be more satisfied physically than he is, and his wife is supposed to be the one who's doing it, and she's not, and that's why he's angry. Where if he can address that lust issue, you know, and that mindset that I deserve physical intimacy from my wife, if he can address that mindset, then the other dominoes will start falling into place. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.